Let's make it happen, Captain!
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. All right, Gov, it's Friday. We're shooting the show late this week.
I've been running around like a chicken with my head cut off lately.
Yeah, yeah, it's crunch time here, so let's just get the show started. From Nick, he wrote us and said, I have a Linksys E1200 router and XP Pro fully updated. Showing that I have an unsecured connection on my router, but I configured it to use WPA2. Should I be worried?
Let's take a look at the Linksys router. This is just a wireless N. What does Bing tell us about it? I can't tell if it is a...
So we wrote Dave. Oh, Dave, write us back. We need a screenshot of this, first of all, would be our first ask.
It's a single band router, so he said it was an E1200, right?
Yeah.
So one of my first thoughts was that this was actually a simultaneous dual band router,
mm-hmm.
and he only configured one half of it, the 2.5 or yeah. the 2.4 or the 5 gigahertz band.
Yeah.
If Windows is reporting it as, like right here, if you go to the signal strength meter, and you hover it, and it says security type is WPA2,
mm-hmm.
then it is actually transmitting and connecting at a WPA2.
Yeah.
His firmware, there might be something wrong with the router's firmware
mm-hmm.
That's saying that it's not. I'd go check and see if he has a later firmware for the router.
Yeah. So update the firmware, and then check this out, hover over it, and see what you get there.
Yep.
And then send us a screenshot, too. We'd be happy to keep helping.
If it's the kind of router that you have to press a button on the front, and you can go to your laptop and it'll pair automatically,
yeah,
that should also default to WPA2,
mm-hmm.
If you're running Win 7.
It's XP, so...
Oh, if it's XP, XP, I don't believe, supported WPA2.
Hmm. Okay.
So he might actually have a problem there.
Okay.
If he wants WPA2, he might actually have to install the supplied drivers that came with, you know, if it came with a dongle or something.
Yeah.
But the actual radio, if he bought a machine, you know, a while ago and it came with XP or it's just an older machine,
yeah.
The actual chip itself, the wireless chip, may not support WPA2 at all.
Okay. Let's know what kind of laptop you have too, Nick, and we'll help you out with that and we'll find out. From Dave, he said, I found where to exclude file types from a start menu bar search, but notice there are a ton of options based on what available file extensions there are. I like to hit the Windows key and start typing to launch something quickly, but I've noticed when I go to type something like iTunes, it brings up about iTunes documentation. I'm lazy and would rather exclude certain types rather than delete all the files in the start menu I don't need. Is there an easy way to uncheck all the options or to set particular ones quickly like EXE and LNK? So we talked about this once before, and I think the iTunes one was the example that we used. And so the way to fix that is you can just rename the About iTunes icon
to
like Z, as long as it's
or
not
Z.
Yeah, yeah. That's how I remember that conversation. We end up with a three-show debate on Z and Z. But is there a way to exclude certain file types from that search?
You can, but it would affect the searching globally. It's not
yeah.
just the start menu.
Yeah.
So you can exclude a whole bunch of stuff. You can turn off indexing on certain folders in your start menu.
Yeah.
But it becomes significantly more complicated, and it does affect the rest of the system of what gets indexed.
Yeah, so there might be a better way to do that so that you can type fast and hit enter and launch your stuff.
In this particular case, you know, one-time hit, don't be lazy and just rename or
yeah.
delete the shortcuts that you don't care about.
Yeah. Okay. From Siadmi, which I always want to say incorrectly, he said, I noticed you use Bing MS Beta internal preview. Any WikiLeaks-style news on what new things are planned? We won't tell anyone. I hope not. But yeah, you do, it says MS Beta 0 up there. And this is just, what's the story with this, Gov? Are you, like, dropping secrets every time we do a show?
No real secrets. In fact, you know, a lot of people can get onto the Bing beta.
Yeah.
Both internally and externally.
But this isn't going to show any of the really new features that they're getting ready to launch. So don't,
no,
you know,
I don't
stay
have that
up
level
at night hitting pause on the videos. You know, you're not going to, we're not putting out any secrets here. But you can see that there's some new updates to Bing that
yep.
they rolled out yesterday
yep.
that are pretty cool.
Do you want to talk about that now?
Let's talk about it. I mean, you can see at the bottom we have a little bar there that comes up that's new. More time doing, less time searching.
Which is, you know, exactly really what people want to do. Certainly
yeah.
what I want to do.
Yeah.
If I have to go and start digging, you know, past two or three pages of search results.
Yeah.
Trying to find what I'm looking for, it's just not worth my time.
Yeah. And this is a continuation on Bing getting better and better every day. And there's a big blog post here. You can read all the details about it. And there is a video that you can watch on it that'll walk you through some of the new stuff. And, yeah. It's a lot more relevant. It's a lot...
it's pretty without being too overwhelming.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a nice good amount of white space there. Things are out of the way until you actually go hover over them. It's not just in your face. It's not, you know, like the old Flash banner ads of yesteryear.
Yeah. you know, Dan Fernandez was talking about how we should have like a blind taste test between Google and Bing now, because I think when you strip away all the formatting and the look and everything of it,
mm-hmm.
The results speak for themselves. I mean, mm-hmm. Bing is really getting better every day. So if you haven't tried it out in a while, you definitely want to give it a shot. We both used to use Google back in the day.
Oh, absolutely.
And even when there was a search property on Microsoft, I tend to go to Google quite a bit. And now I'm a real convert, genuine convert.
I had a sign on my door that had, you know, please Google before knocking.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I crossed that out, and then I went, you know, please Bing before knocking. And then I crossed that out, went back to Google.
Yeah.
When, you know, when it was Windows Live back then. It was before we had the Bing name. And then now it's just, you know, all of them are horribly scratched out, and it's a big old Bing on it. And it's not just due to advertising. If it didn't work for me,
yeah.
if it didn't work for, you know, the majority of people out there, I would never recommend it.
Yeah.
But it is just better.
Cool. All right, we've got a comment from last show from Evil Dictator, who says, and by the way, Evil, thank you for your clarification on PAE. Always enjoy it. Send me your address. I'll send you a 9 guy. You're a good cat. Evil says, here's a shout-out for the new Windows Update optional extra that appeared this week without much fanfare and that most people won't have noticed. And it's KB2694771. And it changes your desktop wallpaper every day to a random Bing wallpaper. To install, just open Windows Update, select it, and install from the optional updates. So, yeah, if you like the Bing backgrounds, which are quite nice, mm-hmm. you can get those on your desktop background. So,
which is funny. I mean, there's a Bing background. I'm pretty sure we've talked about, you know, my rotating desktop, which is also supplied by Bing, which is I get it through the Bing Dynamic. So if you go to Get More Themes Online, and I'm almost certain that we've talked about this before, you can get these additional themes.
Cool. Yeah.
That you can download and look for the ones with the RSS feed, because those will pick up new ones all the time.
And I like that they have it broken out by animal, so that I can get just the animals that stare at me in shows on my desktop. I love those. I love to have weird eyeballs peering at me. So that's awesome.
No, this one's staring at me though.
I don't know. He's kind of, I think he's looking at me, my man.
Well, one eye has me, one eye has you.
And it makes me miss Florida. All right, so next question. I installed some updates for Windows 7 from Windows Update yesterday, and it completely messed up my screen resolution for some reason. I also had 1920 by 1080 working fine without problems, but now it shows 1280 by 1024 at maximum. I've tried applying different resolutions and running Windows Repair, but nothing helps. Well, it sounds like the Windows Update might have horked or replaced the graphics driver.
Yep.
So my thing in this would be just go to the OEM that the graphics card is from, download the latest drivers, install those, and that's probably going to take care of it. And
also do look in your update history. So if you go to Windows Update, you can check out your update history and see actually what got installed.
Yeah.
And if anything, you know, related to a graphics driver got installed, uninstall it.
Yeah.
See if that gets you back to where you were. And, you know, if you have a particular update, so example, this is going to be the Bing desktop, right? Let's say I never want to see the Bing desktop ever again.
Yeah.
Which I might want to do. I could just choose hide the update.
Yeah.
And I won't see that anymore. And you could do the same thing for a graphics driver update if it got pushed down.
Now, what if you decide you've made a horrible mistake there?
Oh, you can go back and unhide the update.
Okay, cool. All right.
Don't worry.
Next question. Is there a way to kill the virtual PC host process, vpc.exe, in Process Explorer? It runs as a subprocess of svchost.exe, itself a subprocess of services.exe.
You don't ever really want to kill a service in that manner. At least not through Process Explorer.
Yeah.
You want to actually go to the root service and turn it off that way. I don't know if this machine, if I've ever installed a virtual PC on it. I have not. But, you know, you can just find the virtual PC service, click on it, right-click, stop it. And if you never want it to run again, before you hit stop, go to Properties, choose Disabled, save it, and then stop it.
Cool.
And then that service won't start up for you anymore.
Okay. All right, next question. After installing Windows 7, my Intel SSD was drive zero. I added an extra hard drive for storage, and now the new drive is drive zero. I've tried switching the SATA ports on the motherboard, and it doesn't make any difference. Can this part change the drive number?
There should be no need to change your drive number.
Yeah.
Nobody should ever care about it.
Yeah.
The only thing that might matter is the boot order, and you could change that in the BIOS.
Yeah.
Which would be the only level of change if you absolutely wanted to do it that I would try.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, if you're still booting off the SSD, fine. Leave it alone.
Yeah, excellent. All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. So my first one is Dexpot. So this is a beta that I saw the other day, and it's kind of cool. It's a virtual desktop. You know, some people love the virtual desktops, so this is another one. Of course, you can use desktops from sysinternals, but you might want to check this one out. It's kind of cool. You can drag and drop your applications between your virtual desktops. And the latest update that they have, this Beta 16, allows multi-monitor support, which is kind of cool, too. So, yeah, try it out if you like that kind of thing.
What do you use virtual desktops for?
Well, so sometimes I have a lot of browser windows open, and I got that kind of OCD thing where if I know that there's a ton of browser windows or I click on the browser icon, it doesn't even show thumbnails anymore. It shows a huge list. Drives me a bit nuts. So I'd use a virtual desktop to just kind of move some of my browsing windows off to a different section.
Okay.
So that'd be...
So you don't ever like to close websites, do you?
Well, sometimes I just need a lot of different websites open. So that's one of the things. And sometimes I'm on different tasks. So I might be like getting ready for a Channel 9 Live thing and have a bunch of windows open for that. And then I shift to doing like defrag show prep. And then I shift to a different task. And so I could have a different virtual desktop for each of the different tasks that I'm on. And as I switch between those, I can just switch desktops. And there's no clutter from other applications that I got to look at and say, you know, yeah, this was for something else. And
do you ever pull tabs off of your browser and regroup them into different main browser windows?
I do. I do that quite a bit. And the other thing that I do, too, and I don't know if there's a in fact, I know there's not a way around this, is I grab the favicon on the URL and drag it to the desktop a lot because that's just the way that I've always kept links, and so it's like an ingrained habit. And with the new IE, when you do that, it like closes down the window and then fires up a new window that's kind of branded and has the colors from that site and stuff. So I'd prefer not to do that, and I don't think there's a way around
it. You don't want to do the branding.
No,
stuff.
I just want, and even if I hold like Control or Shift or something, you'd think, well, it's not going to do that. It'll just make an icon on the desktop so I can remember it later, and it doesn't. But the problem is it loses my history and all the other stuff. That not a fan of that. So I'm going to talk to those guys, but that's another thing that I tend to do quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm similar to you. I occasionally use another virtual desktop. But more often than not, it's just pulling off tabs and grouping them into, you know, specific tasks or things that it's like, oh, I'm planning a vacation. You know, here's all the different travel-related stuff, yeah. And here it is all in one window, and I don't want to necessarily save them as favorites. It's something that I've been comparing, you know, at a particular time, and I want to, if I want to minimize the whole thing, I want them to all go down at once.
I'm planning a vacation is the demo that everyone seems to do, and I plan my vacations like once every 3 years. So every time I hear that, it makes me laugh. I'm like, who are these people? Who are these people doing these demos that go on so many vacations?
Well, you know me. It's like one vacation every 12 years.
Yeah, you got to do a lot of planning for that one. All right, so you've got a pick of the week, too. What do you got?
I have two pick of the weeks that are pretty related to each other. For folks that know me, I don't tend to like to push on hot fixes a lot because it gets people onto a different servicing track versus just getting your updates from Windows Update all the time.
Yeah,
which
and they're
I
usually
prefer.
Pretty specific to
they're really, really specific. You know, a particular customer needed something fixed, and we issue a hot fix just for them.
Yeah.
But in some cases, we have a very generic kind of thing, and I like to look at the perf improvement ones. Mm-hmm. So I've got two fixes here that are hot fixes that if I had my way, I'd be pushing them out as Windows updates right now.
Yeah.
I've looked at the code. I've actually done a code review on these particular fixes, and I like them.
It passes the Go code of approval?
I look at things, for hotfixes, I'm really concerned about compatibility issues.
Yeah.
You know, if something comes out and it breaks your machine in a particular situation, I don't like those.
Yeah.
But these are really nice and generic.
Yeah.
They improve startup and boot times.
Cool.
Very nice, very generic. Everybody can benefit from them.
And so what is this doing exactly that improves start time?
For this particular one, when you're starting up, WMI does a full validation of the repository.
Yeah.
This particular fix doesn't nullify it. It just makes it so it doesn't have to do a full verification. So it helps speed up the startup and logon time, because if the repository is fine, there's no need to do a full check on it.
Cool. And since I've got an SSD on this machine, I can't wait to try this, because it's going to be like
help.
A bat out of hell.
This should help. And I've got another fix, but this particular KB article is 2617858. The next one is KB2510636. This is another startup performance enhancement. This particular fix has been taken by some OEMs, so if you've actually bought a new machine, mm-hmm. you're very likely to already have this fix.
Yeah.
So don't be surprised if it says, you know, this is already installed or it doesn't apply to your system.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you ever wipe your machine, you know, you rebuild from scratch, this could be something that you want to do. This one has a potential to shave anywhere from like 5 to 8 seconds off of your startup time.
Nice.
For a lot of people, that is very important. For me, it was, well, I rarely ever restart, so I don't care.
Yeah.
But these particular fixes, I know a lot of people care about it, and I think would be useful. I think you should go hammer on them. More people that download it will tell us that it is more confidence that this should go out as a general update for everybody.
Cool. And this is good for Windows 7, SP1, and Windows Server 2008 R2 and R2 SP1.
Yeah, and the previous fix was good for those same OSs as well.
Cool. Awesome. All right, that is the show for this week. Thanks for watching. If you want to write us, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave a message in the comments. We prefer the email so we can go back and forth, and Gove does that in the middle of the night, so don't be surprised. See you next week.